From the Vaults, audio from Edmonton's past.
This cassette recording from the Voices of Old Strathcona Project is an interview of Robert M. Curry on June 8, 1992, and was digitized in May 2022.
This is Norm Olson. It is 8 June 1982, and I'm at 3604 112 A Street talking with Bob Curry. Bob, to start the interview, I wonder if you could just tell us your full name and your date and place of birth.
Robert McNeil Curry, born at Strathcona, the 29th of November, 1915. I was a twin, actually. My brother John was my twin.
Oh, is he still living here?
No, he is deceased, actually.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. And I noticed your parents, one of them came from Ontario and one from Scotland. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, the Curry family, or the father, came from Colonsay in Scotland and arrived out here 1830.
Now, when you mean here, does that mean to Ontario?
Actually to Montreal.
Okay.
His parents, they were dispossessed of their land in Colonsay and went to Glasgow, and both his parents passed on, and the only living relative he had was an aunt who lived in Montreal, and he came out via sailing ship to...
In 1830?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And that was your grandfather, was it?
That was my grandfather, okay. Yes, that's right.
And then where did he live?
He moved to Bruce County in Ontario, mm-hmm. And he married a... just a moment, please. I'll grab my...
Okay, could you describe where Colonsay is?
Yes, well, it's actually on the west coast of... It's in the Inner Hebrides on the west coast of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Islay, of course.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yeah. And Jura.
Jura, and then it's west of Jura, I guess.
Yeah, and Oban, the ferry goes from Oban to...
To the main town there.
Salisbury.
Okay. And your grandfather was from the north...
Northwest corner of the island.
Okay. And have you visited there?
Yes, I have. In 1981. They farmed near Paisley in Bruce County.
Okay.
And their family was born there. And about 1879, they moved to North Dakota.
Oh, yes.
To Grafton, and spent 10 years there, actually, farming.
Mm-hmm.
That actually, the area was part of the Sucker settlement. Actually,
that part of the
States.
It was part of the Red River Basin.
Yes, that's right. And of course, the 49th parallel was brought into effect, I guess, after that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they spent 10 years there, and they moved up to they moved up to Alberta in 1891, one of the first movements of passengers, actually. To this area, but they got off at Wetaskiwin, and they homesteaded in the Beaver Hills, about 4 miles west of Bardo, the Norwegian settlement.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And this had been the second, or about the third time around for pioneering, and I guess my grandfather was well on in years, and they moved into the town of Strathcona in 1893.
Now, I understand your grandmother, Isabella Campbell, came directly from Scotland.
That's right, in 1910.
Oh, yeah, and where did they meet then?
They met in Edmonton here.
In Edmonton.
In Strathcona.
In Strathcona.
Yeah, that's right, okay. Yes.
And then they were married here?
In 1912, yes.
1912. And then how many members in the family then?
We had six. There was, I can give you the... here. Donald Alexander was the first son, born in 1913. And my brother and I, Robert McNeil Curry and John McLean Campbell Curry, were born in 1915, November the 29th,
okay.
1915. And our first sister, Pamelia Margaret, was born in 1918, and Isabella Agnes in 1921, and our youngest sister, Jessie Campbell Curry, was born in 1924.
Oh, yeah. And where were you living at that time?
At that, actually, we were living in this, my father's house here.
What's the street address of that?
It was 79 Main Street at that time, or
okay.
Or 8602 104th Street, this thing. Yeah.
And then you were mentioning that, what did he do for a living there?
Well, he worked for Ritchie Mill. He was a grain buyer for Ritchie Mill, and then in 1905 he went with the newly created provincial government, because the territories were divided into Saskatchewan and Alberta at that point.
So he was one of the first civil servants.
He was, that's right. Mm-hmm. And they had an office in the Empire Building, actually, initially.
Oh, really? Down on First Street in Dallas?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And what department was he in?
Treasury.
Treasury.
Yeah,
department.
That's right.
I noticed in that clipping that you showed from his work in Ritchie Mill that he had gone down on a raft with...
with one of the Ritchie boys, that's right.
The Ritchie boys, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That was actually a consignment of flour.
Okay.
Was moved, sold to the reserve.
And that's the Saddle Lake Reserve.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay. And how did, how many people would go in a barge?
There was just the two of them, apparently.
Just the two of them?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they just, and then somebody would have to, how did they get loaded up here, do you know that? Or?
Well, I suppose they went down Ritchie Hill, mm-hmm. no doubt, down to the Walterdale there and yeah. Unloaded the barge there.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most direct route.
Sure. Yeah. And then at the other end, how would they get unloaded?
I suppose the natives would actually have to handle the movement.
Yeah. And I suppose the problem would be to get the barge back again. Do you know how that was done?
No, I really don't know just what the procedure was there.
Now, you were talking about this house on Main Street, that it was built of rough-hewn timber, is
that? That is that back portion.
Oh, yes.
Which was picked up from this spot. It faced, and that it actually faced on 4th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was turned around and set on the foundation here, and this front portion of it was added in 1912.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the one that on the right in this picture.
Yes.
And the one on the left on the picture was another house.
Was a new house. My father.
You built another house there.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. On the vacant lot that was left.
Side.
Yeah.
You mentioned that he. Was there cows running on this area?
Well, they were stables. Actually, when we were children, there was quite a number of stables in the district. Where people rose at least had chickens and a cow. I know Keeley,
oh, yeah.
who lived near us. He had a cow there until well into the 20s.
It really is?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And did you have cows on your...
Well, no. It was actually moved off the property.
The stable part?
Yes, to the back of the... into the next lot.
Okay.
And eventually became a garage.
Yeah. But there was vacant land there to graze cattle on, wasn't there?
Well, it was all... There was nothing really west of there. My grandparents, of course, built the Campbell House there on 105th Street and 86th Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the first stucco houses in Edmonton.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When was that built
there? It was built about 1912.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Now, your father worked for the provincial government. How long did he work there?
He worked there until he retired in 1936.
Oh, yeah. So that must be quite a milestone in the... Did he get any special recognition at that time?
Well, they had a change of government.
But
he was of retirement age. Mm-hmm. So. Well, he was 69, actually.
Was that the reason he retired, was the change in government?
Well, you know, he was 69, and I think 65 was possibly the...
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was no political implication in this?
Not specifically, no. No, he had actually served under the Farmers' government and the Liberal government and Conservative government, I suppose.
No,
so that there.
He was a neutral civil servant.
That's right. Oh, indeed. Yes, that's right.
Now, you went to school in the Strathcona area, I understand.
That's right. King Edward.
Okay. And what was King Edward like? Was that an elementary school?
It was an elementary school at that point. And of course, the junior high was in the old King Edward School, which stood on the southeast corner of... It was Grandin Street School, actually. It was known as.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
This was the old King Edward.
Yes.
The junior high school, and you went there too, did you?
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Do you remember anything about the classes that you attended?
Oh, indeed, yes. I took my grade 8 in that school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to a commercial high, which was up in the third story of the Garneau School, actually.
Oh, the present Garneau School?
Yes.
Right.
And the principal was P.B. Rose.
How many students would attend that?
Well, there was quite a few. They had quite a number of commercial classes there.
Mm-hmm. What do they mean by commercial?
Well, that was typing and stenography and
and
English and math and the whole bit.
So they took typing?
Very much so.
Everybody had to take it?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what was the discipline like in school?
Very good.
What do you mean good? Is it?
Well, it was. I mean, those were hard times. Yeah. People were glad to be going to school.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Right.
And you graduated from that school?
Yes.
And after that, that would be about 1930s, right?
Yeah, 1933. I went, at least in July of 1933, I went to Gainers.
Okay. Had you tried to work before then?
Well, jobs were extremely hard to get. That was, no, I didn't strictly school up to that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you have any difficulty getting on at Gainers?
No. Actually not. I happened to be there on the right day, I guess, actually.
So how did you go about that? Did you just show up at the...
Yes, I did. That's right.
So here I am.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. They hired you, and what did you do at...
I worked in the shipping room
mm-hmm.
for 2 years, and then in the order desk, the sales order desk, for up until I joined the Army in 1941.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what sort of wage did you have then?
Oh, wages were typical, I suppose, 20 or 30 cents an hour. But... there were 50 reasons why you you didn't. Of course, that money at that, at least everything was cheap at that time. I mean, you could buy a roast of beef for 3 cents a pound. So all things being relative, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And the hours of work, what were they like?
Well, they were very flexible at that time because there were, you know, it was a lull after Christmas sort of thing, and you know, you worked, you know, so many days a week.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. But at the peak times, why, you could work longer if you wished.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was the regular work week?
From 7 till 5 is the...
Was
yeah.
The normal work?
Yeah, yeah.
And what were staff relations like?
It was a family firm. It was very good, mm-hmm. really, yeah.
The sort of people got along very well.
Indeed, that's right.
Were there staff activities too? Were there picnics or anything?
Oh, yes, very much so. We used to have picnics. They used to be held down in Rainbow Valley here, actually, if it's not too far away from here.
What's Rainbow Valley?
That's down on the White Mud Freeway.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That valley.
Ravine there, yes.
So what would they do at a picnic?
Well, we have, you know, all sorts of games and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was a major fire at Gainers in 1940 in April. Were you there at that
time? I was. It was just before. I joined up in February of 1941, okay. Actually.
And so what happened to the fire? Were you there when it was burning, actually?
Well, it burned overnight, actually. Mm-hmm. It was in ruins. And they rebuilt, of course.
Okay. What caused the fire?
Oh, I don't know, really. It's, of course, a plant like that has a lot of machinery, and mm-hmm. it's hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did that affect you, the fire? Where did they close the plant for a while?
Oh, no. We carried on, and...
It just burned part of it, was that?
Yes. Yeah. And Swift, I think, came to our rescue, and we came to their rescue many years later.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
There was cooperation?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So,
yeah.
So they took over part of your work then?
Yeah. Yeah, so we are in business.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you went into the services in the beginning of 41.
Yes.
What?
Well, actually, in 1940, I was a member of the Alberta Dragoons, the...
What were they?
They were at the armory in the south side.
Oh,
armory.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And was that...
19th Alberta Dragoons.
And that, was that a reserve unit? Or what?
It was at that time, 19th Alberta Dragoons. My brother was in that too, and he was called up in 42. And it was sent out to the coast, actually, with the 31st Reconnaissance
mm-hmm.
Regiment. That was after Pearl Harbor, and they were quite concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. And in the Alberta Dragoons, what did you do? Did you have training or something?
Oh, yes, yes.
What hours or what
Well, those were very anxious times, and you know, we used to pray once a week. And
oh, yes.
Yeah, on 4th Street. And
then what happened when you signed up? Did you go off for the? Did you leave here for some?
Well, no. When I joined up in February of 41, and I worked at Prince of Wales Armories and took my basic training at Camrose.
Oh yes.
Should be the first thing, please.
So you were at Camrose, and where were you stationed in Camrose?
In the normal school.
The old normal school.
That's right. Yeah.
And then you took your training at the.
At the camp there.
At the camp.
That's right.
Nearby.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you there?
It was a 3-month basic training course.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went overseas in 1943 in January. We went to Aldershot and we took our advanced training at
at Aldershot. Aldershot.
At Aldershot, that's right.
When you were crossing the Atlantic, were you in a troop ship?
We were in a troop ship, the Empress of Scotland, which was formerly the Empress of Japan, which was sanitized to a better name.
How long did that trip take?
It was 10 days and extremely stormy. It was one of the worst winters in the North Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in charcoal bars, actually.
Did you go in convoy?
No. It was the fastest boat on the Pacific. It was it was a very bad time for crossing the, I guess the wolf packs were out. And,
just because it was fast, they didn't...
Yes, and the weather was so dreadful. I guess the submariners weren't happy with it.
It would be hard to find you then.
Yes.
And then you were at Aldershot for...
We landed at Liverpool,
mm-hmm,
and went by train to Aldershot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long were you there?
We were there for 3 months. And then we were posted to various units and the reinforcements in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in Britain until early in July of 1944,
mm-hmm,
and we then moved into Normandy.
Oh, yes.
And then through Belgium, spent part of the winter in Belgium and part of it in the Netherlands, actually.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm.
And we ended up in Germany, actually, in VE Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What town was it you were in?
Actually, we were stationed north of Deventer, actually. Enschede. One of the towns. There's several towns in that area.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that was the end of the war. How long did it take when, after the war was over for you to get back?
Well, we were in the medical corps, actually.
In the which?
Dental medical corps. And we were held there until very late because, we were, a lot of the other units had been moved back to Canada. So I arrived here just before Christmas, 1945.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
They just didn't have the shipping to.
No,
to
that's right. Or,
and then you had to go back to work, I guess.
Yes, I went back to work at Gaynor's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had kept a job, right?
Indeed, they had. That's right. Yes.
Back,
yeah.
So how did you feel about adapting back to regular work?
Well, it was quite after being in the Army for 5 years, it was quite a change of...
a change of base?
Yeah.
How did you have some regrets about leaving the Army?
Oh, no, actually not, no. We used to say that if we ever joined another Army, it would have to be the Salvation Army.
And so what did you do at Gaynor's after you came back?
I was in the order desk. And then I became a traffic manager.
What does that mean?
Well, that's handling inbound and outbound shipments of materials and shipping of all goods.
Oh, so that you arranged how they would...
That's right. See, we were on the old Edmonton Pacific, or EYPT spur there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we used to load out product to our various branches of Vancouver and Victoria.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And and then you became a purchasing agent.
That's right, yes.
Was that a promotion or was that...
it was certainly, no, it
yeah.
It was a managerial job.
And
yeah.
What did that involve?
Well, all purchasing of all... materials for the plant.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't the purchasing of the livestock.
No. Well, that's just handled by the livestock department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you worked there for quite a few years.
Yes, I retired in 1980, on my birthday, November the 29th, 1980.
So how many years of service did you have?
So that'd be about 48 years, including war service.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was there a lot of long-term employees in the Gators?
Well, there were, that's right, especially in the management.
Yeah.
Of, yes.
Yeah, we're just staying on. How did it affect you when the company was, well, it was sold a couple of times, but the first time was in 72 to Agri-Industries.
So yes, yeah, so which was actually an engineering firm, mm-hmm. and they were in communications, and in the manufacturing of margarine, they were had a wide variety of activities.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent a lot of money on the plant, actually, during their tenure of ownership. And it was really updated.
Mm-hmm. So you felt good about that?
Oh, yes. It was, the Gainers are a family firm, and they were very good. Really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Agra carried on the tradition. Yeah.
The tradition. And then it was the company was sold again in 1978
I don't think the sale wasn't consummated until 1981, I guess.
Oh,
January.
I yeah. So it was after your
Yes, that's right. No, I did some work for them just on an advisory capacity. Up until 1983, and I was just a part-time type of job. Yeah.
So how did the sale again affect the company and
well,
things go on as before? Or?
Well, of course, it was quite a different. We were Swift and Gainers people were all, amalgamated.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really after my time as a full-time employee.
Yeah. That didn't really affect the operations, is that?
No, they really expanded. They built a large shipping addition to the firm over there to meet the market.
Yeah. Do you have anything to do with other Gainers employees now?
Yes, I see associates that were...
That's on an individual basis.
Yes, right,
I noticed you had a lot of community involvements in your time in this area.
I was a member of the Edmonton Civic Opera Society.
What did that do?
Well, we put on... I joined them in 1937,
mm-hmm.
and I was married in 52, and I gave up activities as far as the course, and that was true, but I was a treasurer for a number of years.
And is that still called the Civic Office?
No, Mrs. J.B. Carmichael was the founder of it, and when she passed away about 1963, I guess the society wound down at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there a successor society to that?
Well, there is. I think the present opera society is, does.
Is really continuing on
that. Yes, that. That.
Mm-hmm. And then you were also a member of a choral group.
This was D.W. Vaughan, who was an organist in the town. He gathered a group of people around him in the 1930s.
And
we put on the Messiah in 1936, I guess it was. And there's many people belonged to that. That there was little to do, and you took certainly were glad to have the opportunity of.
So where would you put on something like the Messiah?
But we put that on in Knox United Church, actually.
Oh, yes. And you did a production every year, or several productions?
We did in other areas, yes.
But Miss Messiah in 1936.
Well, that was the highlight, yes. That's the highlight. That's right. There was many people that were unemployed, there were, and a lot of people from England that, from a tradition, the Messiah was presented over there many years and in these little towns, and still is, for that matter, I guess. And so we had a lot of professional help.
And do you remember any of the people at
One or two of my associates from the plant were in the chorus. Met some interesting people.
And then I noticed you were a member of was it a debating society?
Well, that was in Young People's, actually.
What are Young People's?
Well, that was the various churches had young people societies.
Received for
well, that's can you read that inscription?
Well, this was a citywide. It was the Young People's Debating League, won by Robert M. Curry and Associates, of course. There was a
other people.
Yeah, that's right.
So you were representing your particular group at that debating society.
That's right. Gordon Gaynor, one of the Gaynor boys, was Chester Gaynor's son, was on the group.
On your team.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And what were you debating?
We were debating upon the dangers of war, actually.
So were you debating for or against?
Well, we were in favor of Anthony Eden's policy, which was much more stiff than his boss's at that point.
Oh, I see.
Time vindicated, I guess.
I guess so. That's interesting in retrospect. You were also interested in hiking, I noticed.
Well, I think all the young people at that was about the only source of entertainment that one we could afford in those days, was wiener roasts and skating parties and whatnot.
So what would a hike consist of?
Go down to White Mud.
And camp down there? Or?
Well, they were generally evening, evening hikes,
have a wiener roast.
That's right.
Did you do it as a group, or is it?
Oh, yes, as a group, yeah.
Was it organized around the church?
Initially, that's true, yeah.
And were there any other activities that you participated in at that time?
There was a Sunday school class, which was sponsored by Dr. McNally, who was Deputy Minister of Education, and it was an interdenominational one. Lots of people from Knox Metropolitan attended the class, and it disbanded actually just after the war. But he was a very brilliant teacher, and and we met in the Strathcona Library in the basement.
Oh, really? Is that right? And how many people did you
meet? Quite a number. Yeah. A lot of them were school teachers, and
Well, would it be 10 or 20 or for what time?
Well, I'd say around 20 at any rate.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And did you go every
until I went overseas, and they kept in touch with us, of course, in our absence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They sent you things.
Yes, right? That's right. Okay.
And what sort of Sunday school we usually think of young people going to that?
These were people in their teens, actually, late teens. Mm-hmm.
And it was and there was people from the United Church.
Oh yes,
From your church.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
You were from the Baptist Church.
Yes, that's right.
So it was an interdenominational group.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, we met there, and he was very. Took great concern in his charges. And,
What sort of lessons did he teach there?
Well, we reviewed philosophy and you know, and different, you know, people. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did it get organized? You know.
Well, it was it was founded earlier, in the early about 1914 initially, but then Dr. McNally, who was headed up the Camrose Normal School, mm-hmm. Was posted back to Edmonton, and he, about 1919, and he took over the class at that point.
And how did you get interested in it?
Well, a lot of our older students joined his class when we, you know, had graduated.
Oh, I see. You mean from school,
then? Yes, and the church school, I mean, it was within, by the mid-teens, why there were, you know, weren't any Sunday school classes that could really provide.
That you could attend, so a lot of people went to that.
Yes.
You remember Dr. McNally, do you?
Oh, very, very much so, yes.
What can you say about him? What was
a very fine man, and a very, you know, he was Deputy Minister of Education. Mm-hmm. And he was the supervisor of school for many years. And he also was a... traveled around the province in the early years, mm-hmm. Organizing school districts and checking on the performance of teachers.
This was a newly settled.
Yes, in 1905. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the province was formed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I noticed you're a member of the Strathcona Baptist Church, and I guess your father is listed here as one of the founders.
Yes, the grandparents.
Your grandparents and your father,
yes,
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's a number of Currys.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Are they your other brothers or?
No. They were uncles.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And when was that church formed?
It was 1895, I believe.
Okay. And I noticed the Gainers were members of that church.
That's right, yes. Mrs. John Gainer was.
So you knew the Gainers personally then?
Yes, I did, yeah.
You still attend that church?
I do, yeah.
Now, you also, I guess there's something of a Scottish tradition in your family. Is there anything that particularly that you do to maintain that tradition?
Oh, yes, our grandchildren do Highland dancing.
Okay.
Yeah. As did their fathers, or at least their mothers, previously.
Mm-hmm. Did you do that to yourself?
No.
You just
your
children interested in it.
Right.
Now, where did you meet your wife? You said you were married in 1952.
Yes, she worked at Gainers, in the office of Gainers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long did she work there? Did she leave then, or...?
Yes,
where did she work in the Gainers?
In the shipping order desk, actually.
Order desk.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were actually working in the same
department.
And when you were first married, where did you live?
We lived in this house here, which was the oldest family house. Yeah.
So this was the one next to the new one your father built.
Yes.
And it was made
partly
of your father's old house with this.
Yeah, that was the old family house, which was actually moved.
Over there.
Yeah.
Okay.
This house here.
Okay,
it faced onto 4th Street and 86th and 86th Avenue.
And
you can see some of the trees around there.
Oh,
they're very
sparse.
Yeah.
And what time was that picture taken of the original house?
Oh, I really don't know what the time of year.
Well, I mean, what year was it? Do you know about what year that would be?
It would be about 1899 or thereabouts.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that.
See, this is our house. So taken. This was written in the back of it.
Oh,
taken
I see.
Last fall. We have some flowers and vines around it this year, and it does not look quite so bare. So.
That's great. And can you? That was a rough-hewn timber then. Where
That's
was
right.
that timber made?
Well, I'm sure it was from John Walters.
John Walters,
yeah.
No, it was awkward.
But they weren't smooth planks, I can tell you that.
Was I? So what was the difference between that?
Well, you know, structurally, I guess.
It was all.
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah.
A little hard to paint. Maybe,
yeah, right.
And do you remember any of your neighbors that lived around this?
Yes. At what particular time?
Well, at the time when you were first, well, when you were young and then later on.
Oh, yes. Well, my uncle owned this house and it was rented out until to several people. There was the Whitbys and the Roberts. And
then you mentioned a house across the street.
Yes, that was Mackenzie.
Jim
Mackenzie, he was the one of the mayors of Strathcona. Yeah.
And that's where the Tory Museum is.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the Duncans were just south of us across the 86th Avenue and 104th Street. And he was a druggist.
Oh, yeah. Where was his drugstore?
It was on White Avenue, I think, where the Red Star. At least it was next to the California Fruit and Confection, at least Palace of Sweets, was it called?
Yeah,
next to the Palace of Sweets.
I thought the Palace of Sweets was on
Jasper. No, well, that used to be called the Palace of Sweets. It was owned by the Annists, actually.
Okay.
But it was an ice cream parlor and tea shop and whatnot.
Do you know where that is now?
Right in the corner. It's where that pancake house was.
Oh, where the Uncle Albert's.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And then the drugstore was just next to.
That's right. It was a brick building right east.
East of the.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the Duncan,
yeah.
Was that the only drugstore there then?
That's right. Well, of course, Cowell was across the street.
Mm-hmm. Across White Avenue.
Right next to Hub.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The Hub was there at that time.
Oh yes, yeah, still is. Yeah.
Still is. Yeah. It's
in spite of everything.
Yeah. Okay. And were there any other neighbors that you?
Oh yes, there was actually the Mackenzie house was bought by a chap who ran a clothing store on White Avenue, Galper.
Galper,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Galper.
Right? Yeah, that's right. And then Spicers lived on 86th Avenue, west of 104th Street. They ran a bakery, and there's a big barn at the back of their property just near the railway that they stable their horses, I guess, for deliveries of bread.
Oh, really?
Spicers, yeah.
Where was the, now exactly where was that barn? Do you remember?
It was actually right on the lane where the railway went here, and it was just on the west side of the lane.
Okay.
Back of the Duncan house and south.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And then there was a fellow right next door to Duncan, by the name of Hamilton, and I think the son became a druggist. That was on 4th Street. Just, and then the other house was just short of the railway, and it still stands there yet, and it was. It was owned by A.G. Walker.
Now what side of the railway track is
it? It's on the north side of the track.
Still on the north side.
Yeah, that's right, on 4th Street there.
Yeah.
And there was no other houses in between there until after the war, actually.
Okay.
I think Dr. Such lived in that house, and then he built a house just west, north of there, a cottage.
Okay. Well, I think that's everything we... Is there something else that you want to say about life in South Dakota at that time?
It was certainly a good town to have lived in, and I see the current residents seem to think it's worthwhile preserving.
Mm-hmm. And you moved down here...
In 69.
In 69. Yeah. Is that from this house?
That's right. Okay. In fact, the city had envisioned a roadway going through there for the Fifth Street Bridge, and everything was frozen. Actually, you couldn't sell your house or.
And so, is that the reason that you moved there?
Largely that, because you know we sold it to the city for about $18,000, $18,500 or something, which was pretty poor.
Was that a good price, Andrew, or was it?
Well, I suppose the city thought so. And of course, some of the where the Ritchie House, it was on the corner of 4th Street and Saskatchewan Drive. And that house had moved up to Garneau, the old house, and a fellow by the name of Jameson that built a house there after the war. Mm-hmm. And then the Ritchies built a house next to that. And that was all sold for that great big Fort Garry tower. So real estate prices were high, but mm-hmm. they weren't where they were affected.
Where they weren't building big buildings.
No, that's right.
Okay, well, thank you very much for
Chris Cooney actually worked at Gainers.
We were
associated.
His wife mentioned me too.
Yes, surely.
Was you?
And poor Chris passed on.
I noticed that. Yeah. And actually, that paper that you gave me from my team, you donated it to the foundation.
Yes, that's right.
I took it along, and I noticed his picture was in a...
Yes, that's right. And
well, he worked there many years too.
And Dave Morrison, who was also a salesman, I knew him very well. We were very close friends.
Yeah. So is Morrison still alive, or?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
I don't know if I can find that picture. Okay, if you want to. Just to end our interview, you want to tell us when you moved here and to maybe describe what your family are doing.
Yes. Okay. Yes, we moved down to 3604 112A Street in September of 1969, and our children attended Harry Ainey High School and D.S. McKenzie Junior High in Duggan.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Our eldest daughter, Heather Jean, took her grade 10 in Old Shkona because we were from the old house. And Douglas Campbell took his, got his degree from the high school in 1973, and went on to university, and took a course in zoology, and then switched to entomology for his master's, or his PhD actually.
Oh, yes.
And he was fortunate in receiving a Killam Foundation 2-year fellowship postdoc at University of British Columbia. And Heather went on to NAIT and took dental assisting. And Barbara Joan went on to She worked for Woodward's food floor for many years and is now working for Safeway in the same position. And Peggy Isabella Margaret is lives in Stony Plain, or at least actually at Hubble's Lake, just outside of Stony Plain. And Duncan Robert Malcolm is in Ottawa with the Stats Canada.
Yeah. So all your children are living here except Duncan, is that?
Yes, and Douglas has been out at the coast, of course, for 2 years on his postdoc, and he's dropping by here on the way down to the east.
He's going east too.
So. Yeah, that's right.
Rekindle your relationship with Bruce County, I guess.
That's right.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you very much, Bob, for your time.
Well,
thank you. And we hope that you'll find this an interesting experience, and we hope that you'll keep up your relationships with Old Strathcona, even though you've moved a little ways away from
Surely.
Where you started. Okay.
This material is a digitized audio recording from the holdings of the City of Edmonton Archives. For more information regarding the recording, please contact us by email at cms.archives@edmonton.ca, by phone at 780-496-8711, or on our online catalog at cityarchives.edmonton.ca.